Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I am your host, Autosport International Editor Lewis Duncan, and as ever, I am joined by Motorsport.com's Global MotoGP Editor, Oriol Puigdemont. Yuri, how are you doing? How's lockdown life treating you?
Hello, we're good. We're good here in Australia, still in Australia. Still trying to find the right spot to come back home, but yeah, considering how the situation is in Europe, I think we are not bad here. Yeah, that's the picture at the moment.
Well, let's talk about some bike racing, even though there's no bike racing, but you know,
yeah.
It's still nice to talk about it. It's actually been quite a busy week. First of all, we'll talk about Alex Rins, Suzuki. We actually had a bit of news, so that was nice. Alex Rins has been announced, 2-year deal with Suzuki. As you predicted some months ago now, that the deals were pretty much done. So I mean, no great surprise, but obviously a great thing for Suzuki. Double race winner and Alex Rins, very clearly a happy relationship.
Yeah, I think so. As you mentioned, it was all pretty much set and discussed about this new deal, just because it was related to a performance clause, 2 victories last season and 3 podiums in total, I think, if I'm not wrong. So he finished 4th in the championship. So it gave Suzuki the power to renew the contract, both his contract and Mir's contract, which I think is going to be announced in the next days. So yeah, I think both parts are really happy. The only thing that I would like to know, if we have the opportunity, if I have the opportunity, I will ask Alex if this kind of clause is still, if they kept this clause for the new contract, because you know what I mean. It gives the factory, the team, the full power. Well, not the full power, but the power of signing you again, despite maybe you have a better offer. That would be good to know, because it would show the rider's evolution at the same time. The rider, growth.
Both Suzuki riders were options in the rider market. We know especially Joan Mir was really looked at by Ducati, but it's an interesting thing from Suzuki. They really are sticking by this young rider sort of ethos that they have, because this will be, at the end of this contract, it'll be 6 years they've had Alex Rins. You know, they're going to have Mir for 4 years. You know, they haven't even looked at like a big name as such, which I think that's really refreshing, actually, to see a team do that, especially a fairly small manufacturer like Suzuki. It obviously works for them.
Yeah, I think it's the good formula for them. Two young, but at the same time, very talented riders. I think they still are, but let's see how this championship, or when the championship, or if the championship starts at some point. But they were expecting big things from Mir this year. He did a really good precision testing, despite it seems 20 years ago. I think that it's a really good combination. I'm just waiting and I'm expecting to see how each rider pushes the other one.
They were both very, very close in testing, weren't they? Very, very close.
Yeah, I think that it would be good if John can make this step forward, and then he can start pushing Rins even farther.
Yeah, and that's really exciting, because you know, we haven't really had like a team, a really young rider lineup push each other like that for a long time in MotoGP. You know, I think that would be really exciting, and we know how good a rider Alex is.
Yeah. I think last time was Jorge and Dobby were pushing each other at that level. I mean, both being able to clinch victories. Yeah, but other than that, it's not very often in this MotoGP era since Valentino and Jorge. But yeah, I mean, it's not been
12, 11 years ago.
Well, in
2015, first time anyway, it was, yeah.
In 2015, they were really, really close. But yeah, I mean, in the last 5 years, we haven't got this, like, I think this year, and definitely next year, we're going to have a few examples, like both Yamaha factories will be really, really close, I guess. Hope, and same with Suzuki.
It's really exciting, and you know, you have to look at, you know, if Alex Marquez makes a big step, you know, that he could be a really big motivation for Mark as well. I mean it'll be difficult, but you never know.
Yeah, but I don't see at the moment. I mean, I think it's maybe too much to ask to Alex.
right now, definitely
reach that level.
But you have to think, even if Alex makes like a small step where he's top six, top five, that will force Marquez just to push on a little bit, because he wouldn't want to let Alex ever make that step. As much as he loves his brother, he doesn't want to be racing with him.
Well, yeah, I think there are two different stories here. First one is that I don't think Mark needs any other input to keep pushing himself, and but at the same time, I really believe that we have to ask Alex for some good results this year. I mean, in the end, he's an HRC rider, a Repsol Honda rider, so what should we ask him? So top five, top six, maybe top four, occasionally a podium would be really good, but I think that's what we have to expect from him, because he is the reigning Moto2 champion, and yeah, he rides for Repsol Honda. Otherwise, would be underestimate him or undervalue him.
Definitely, and this stop is actually a really big problem for someone like Alex, because what he needs is time on the bike.
And yeah, that's what Alberto. Yeah, that's what Alberto Puig told me. I think it was 3 weeks ago when I spoke with him. He told me, "Well, this. I mean, for Mark, this stop is clearly an advantage, not anymore, because his shoulder is supposed to be 100% at the moment. But for Alex, it was a really, really, really shame. It was a problem, this stop, because now he has to get used to the bike again. It's not the same process than for a regular MotoGP rider."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I mean, there have been talks that maybe before the first race, whenever that will be, hopefully soon, that there might be a test at the same circuit. So, but even then, you know, you've only got maybe 1 or 2 days, and then you're straight into a race weekend. It's still difficult. And we can't forget as well that Alex really struggled with the bike in Qatar, and then Honda made a change. They've found something. So like you say, they've got to go through that process again. I hope that doesn't reflect badly on Alex. You know, he's going to go into these first races and struggle, and I hope that doesn't just get him down, because it's a very different situation to what it should have been this year.
Yeah, but I mean, if this year finally starts, I think it will be a really, really, really strange year to analyze. So I wouldn't put so much pressure on that. Let's see if the championship starts. Let's see how it goes for all of them, because I think it's not going to be easy to try to adapt to this kind of sprint championship with maybe 8 to 10 races. I think we can have big surprises this year because of this nature of the championship, with much shorter calendar with only 8 to 10 races, I think, yeah, it opens the door for surprises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right, and it's an interesting point because people talk about, oh, you know, if it's a 10 race championship, it's, you know, it's not a good championship, whoever wins it's not, but it's, if anything, it's a harder championship because you've got 10 races in a really short space of time, one mistake and it's over, you know, there's no, you know, so it's, whoever wins this championship, if anything, it's going to maybe even mean more than a normal year because the pressure is so different.
To me, this is not fair. I mean, to say that is not fair because we're going to have the championship that we are able to face. I mean, end of the story. I mean, nobody wanted this situation, but it is what it is. And for me, 5 races is better than any race. 8 races is better than 5 races, and 10 races is better than 8 races. End of the story. So the championship, the value of the championship will be the same, would be a MotoGP World Championship. So, because all the riders will have to adapt to this new formula, and that's all.
Tell you what, I would happily sell my soul to the devil if it meant we can get 10 races this season. I know you're the same, we all miss racing so much, but, you know, a 10-race championship, a 10-race sprint championship with, you know, you think with Marquez, with Quartararo, with Vinales, even that would possibly open the door for Rossi to be a championship contender. You know, he's not got to stretch out over a season, he can just go for it. You know, it's,
yeah, I think he's really good. Valentino's really good on how would I say, on, yeah, from the strategical point of view. So I think that it really, it gives you the opportunity to make a plan, because with 19 or 20 races, you can recover easy. So you can go full attack and you have much more opportunities to recover from a mistake. But with 8 or 10 races, it's much more difficult to recover a zero. So maybe it would force some specific riders to be a bit more conservative. But I'm just guessing, I don't know. For sure, if I ask them, they will say, no, I will go full gas, 100%, a full attack. So then I will eat my words.
Well, I mean, it is an interesting point because if a rider goes full out and then injures himself, you know, it's not a case of, oh, one or two races you miss. It could be a case of the whole season.
Or the 30% of the championship. I mean, you're missing 3 races or 2 races, which is a possibility, and then you're missing 25% of the calendar.
Yeah, it's going to be a really unique challenge.
That's what I say that it opens the door to different strategies, because you can go full attack, okay, but you're taking much more risk than if you have 19 or 20 races, or you can go step by step, trying to see 4 races to go where you set, or, you know, in the standing, so you can go last part of the calendar full attack, or you can, you know, balance a bit more, or you can be a bit more conservative.
It's a really exciting prospect, so hopefully if everyone just stays indoors, listens to the government, we can go racing soon.
Yeah, I think it would be really good to see this kind of championship, not only because it would mean that we have racing, but because it would change a bit the scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, like we both say, whoever wins that championship is just as much a world champion as in any other season. It doesn't matter if it's 10 races, 12 a world champion's a world champion, especially at this level of MotoGP when everything is so close. Right, we'll go for a quick break there, and then on the other side, we're going to go back to 2013 and just remember a very important day in MotoGP history. Welcome back to this week's Tank Slappers episode. Yuri's still with me, and let's go back in time a little bit to when we were allowed to go outside and racing was a thing. Texas, 2013, a very, very special day in MotoGP history, because Of course, it was the very first victory for Marc Márquez in the Premier class, and you know, in that 7 years since, we know what happened. What do you remember of that day? What were your thoughts of that day?
Well, I think we were all waiting this to happen because Mark, did show since the first race in Qatar with fighting with Valentino, huge potential. So, but at that point, we were not able to see his dominance or his skills. I think it was a good place because after that he won each race in Austin, but 2 years ago when he crashed. It was last year. I think at that point nobody was able to say, listen, this guy is gonna be the next let's say benchmark. I mean, it was a possibility, but at that time we had huge riders like we still have, like Valentino, like Jorge, like Dani, what happened in the years after was completely amazing.
If you look at the rest of that season, I mean, Márquez for a good few races wasn't really a proper title contender. He'd slipped back a little bit compared to Jorge and Danny, and then of course Jorge got the injury, Danny got the injury, and then Mark stepped in, and then of course we know how the championship unfolded. But what struck me about that race, I rewatched it the other day for a feature. You could see he was still very much a rough diamond. There were some moves he made which were a bit rookie, shall we say, but you could still see the class there. The way he kept onto the bike when he was struggling with the front end, you know, any other rider, you know, they would have crashed. That's so Márquez. The way he was hounding Márquez, the way he was still playing at Clever with different tyres, you know.
I remember watching him. Yeah, but I mean, all the quality was there, 100%. But I remember watching him on the screen this first year, and many times I was closing my eyes, especially on braking. And it is not the Mark we are usually watching now. I mean, he has evolved. In 2013, he was really, really, really close to strike a few times, to make a strike on braking sometimes. So I think, luckily, he was good enough to control the bike at the very last second. But that Mark was a bit, let's say, on control. From the spectator point of view, was scary.
Well, that's a very good point, because we obviously saw what happened next time in Jerez with Jorge at the final corner. We saw Silverstone, that Silverstone warm-up where he crashed.
Yeah, but I think that this situation in Jerez is another story, because he was looking for that.
I believe that as well, yeah.
So he was looking for that. He was looking to try to get advantage from the position, which we can discuss if it's fair, if it's not, but he was on control of that braking, you know what I mean? While I don't think he was in full control of the situation a few times, for example, in Qatar, first race. So I remember him braking and say, oh my God, because the bike was shaking a lot. And sometimes he had to release the brakes, going wide and come back. Otherwise, he would have had a huge crash. Crashing into another rider is not the same as crashing alone. So, yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, and he had previous to that, because there was a couple of times in Moto2 in 2012 where he had a couple of big accidents, which he got really punished for. The interest, there was one incident in 2013 that that Marquez got a lot of blame for, but I don't really think it was his fault. It was the contact with Danny in Aragon, where he went round the outside and his elbow touched the traction control cable. I always thought that one was a bit unfair because it was such a freak accident, but, you know, Mark was the target.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think it was, as you said, it was a really weird situation. And you, with your elbow, you can cut, you can disconnect, you can touch the wire of the traction control. And then, but, yeah, it, I mean, what else can we do? This was not deliberate, so it was a unfortunate crash, but I'm not blaming Mark for this, not at all.
Yeah, it was an interesting one, because after that race Honda put a little bit of like carbon fiber over the traction control cable, but every other manufacturer had two cables just in case something like that happened. So it showed the sort of it highlighted the HRC way of, you know, maybe sometimes isn't the best way to go about things. It was an interesting incident.
Yeah. It was an interesting race and an interesting, shocking from outside.
I still think 2013 was maybe my favourite MotoGP season. It was just with Mark coming in and, you know, the championship battle you had, and then, you know, the fact it went all the way to the wire, it was a really good season.
Yeah, I think it showed how this guy was 100% focused, and despite it was a good year because he had to prove Honda that he was good enough and that his value was there, because don't forget that Honda said no to few of his demands in terms of team members, so he had to recover or to win this right to, you know, to recover them from the Moto2 and put them into and promote them into the MotoGP class with Honda, which in a way it's understandable, because if you are a factory and you have your experienced members. So, yeah, it is not easy to say, okay, goodbye, and then we're going to bring a Moto2 people. But he was 100% convinced, and in the end, he was right. After, I mean, his results, his team, to me, is the best, is one of the best in terms of performance, in terms of understanding, then in terms of how they handle the pressure from the strategical point of view as well, because they are the ones offering different kind of solutions in terms of three-tire qualifying and these kind of things. So, yeah, I think it was good. But again, it was not an easy year for him, of course. It can be an easy year for a rookie in MotoGP. But yeah, he just performed as he is, which is a rock star.
Yeah. I think that's a very good way to put it. I think that's a very good note to end on there. Yuri, thanks for your company. And thank you to the listener for joining us this week. We will be back, don't worry, with plenty to talk about. If you like what you heard, you can go and listen to some of our other podcasts on Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, all the podcast places. And make sure you're checking out Autosport, motorsport.com for everything that's going on. We've had breaking news, writing features like mad, so plenty for you to read while you're stuck inside. So yes, please do that, and until next time, it's a very warm goodbye, and please take care of yourself.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com.
Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.